Welcome to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Bucks podcast number one for the season, one of many. I'm Gary D'Amato, general sports columnist of the Journal Sentinel. With me is Matt Velasquez, beat writer of Milwaukee Bucks. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Gary. Glad to be talking with you. People have asked if we were going to revive the podcast after Charles and I used to do it, and I'm really excited for what we have in store for this year.
Yeah, congratulations on getting the Bucks beat. Well-deserved.
Thank you.
You're taking over for Charles, who sailed off in the sunset. We wish him a happy retirement. He's going to miss out on some good things, I think. The team is pretty good, and moving into a new arena next year. So
definitely exciting time for the Bucks. Yeah. That's for sure.
So I want to, first thing I want to talk about, Matt, before we talk about the team is, your first year on the beat, but you've covered Marquette and you've backed up Charles on the Bucks beat. This is not new to you, but it's new to you in the sense of you're going to be doing a lot of traveling. And I wonder how that works. Maybe you could tell our listeners how that works, especially with you. You have children, you have a family, and you're going to be on the road a lot. How do you make all this work?
I'm still figuring out how I'm going to make it work. But for right now, the way it works is, I go where the team goes. And, I don't go with them. I have to fly commercial, and book my own travel and figure out how to get from here to there. What cities do I need rental cars in? What cities do I not? Where are the good places to eat? Recommendations are definitely welcome, folks. If you want to tell me what places are good to eat in certain cities, I'm totally open for that. And to kind of figure out, where the media entrance is at all these arenas. I've been to a bunch of them, but, just the little things of where shoot around is and when it is and, when different availabilities are. It's all some stuff I'm figuring out. And, so far my family's been really supportive. I have a lot of help. My in-laws actually live right next door, so that's pretty clutch when it comes to watching two kids. I got two daughters, 4 and 2. It's been kind of a whirlwind of figuring out how all this is going to work and what it's going to be like. But right now I'm just really enjoying it and getting used to the team and looking forward to hopping on a plane in a couple hours to Boston and getting the season going.
Number one. Yeah, I'll be joining you at a lot of home games, so that'll be a lot of fun for me too. Matt, so the Bucks finished 42-40 last year, make the playoffs, lose in a pretty closely contested series with Toronto. It was kind of an unusual season because Chris Middleton didn't start the year with the team. He was hurt. He comes back, and was it literally the day he
came back?
Yeah, Jabari got hurt, and then they lost him for the rest of the season. They went through a 2-12 slump, I think, right after Jabari got hurt. It's hard to imagine that many things could happen this year, but you never know, right? It could be that kind of normalcy or unnormalcy in a season. You never know with an NBA season.
Oh, yeah, and that's one of the tough things about, making predictions and projections for what's going to happen in the season, because every prediction is made assuming no injuries.
Yeah.
Assuming that nothing crazy happens to any given team. What could the Bucks be, if everyone is healthy for the whole season, or everyone's healthy and then Jabari comes back in February, but that doesn't, count if anything happens to the teams they're contending with, or, if someone on the Bucks gets hurt or just some kind of other random situation, befalls them.
Right.
So you never know what you're dealing with. The nice thing for the Bucks, at least this year in their eyes, is they've controlled a lot of the variables in the sense that they've brought basically their team from last year, back together. I mean, for the first time in franchise history, they've brought back 12 guys from one year to the next. I mean, the most they've done before is 11 and a couple different seasons. But that level of continuity is not common. That's like Spurs-level continuity in terms of, NBA teams trying to, keep the band together. And, so they don't – Gary – and even one of those guys who they didn't bring back, they kind of did because it's Gary Payton II, and he ended the season with the team last year. But, here on Tuesday they announced that they signed him to a two-way contract, which – is not really a surprise considering that they brought him in late last year. They had him for summer league. They had him for preseason. They liked him. They liked the defensive mindset that he had and the things that he could do on the court. And with those two-way contracts open, why would they not give him the opportunity to grow within the herd and stay within the franchise and then also come up and help the team for up to 45 days during the season? So, you're looking at 13 guys from last year's team are back. One of those guys who isn't back is Spencer Hawes, who spent a very limited amount of time with the team and made a small impact. And the other guy is Michael Beasley, who was on a vet minimum contract last year and then was an unrestricted free agent.
Signed with the Knicks, right?
Got another, vet minimum type contract from the Knicks. You know, he wasn't going to wait around for the Bucks to figure out what they were going to do, and they wanted to keep roster flexibility. That's a you know, buzzwords for new general manager John Horst. So, you know, in order to keep that roster flexibility, you can't commit early in the summer when the Knicks did to Beasley and take up that roster spot. So, you know, Beasley moved on, and they'll have to find guys to fill in those slots. And they have two rookies, DJ Wilson and Sterling Brown, who they're, you know, hoping they can get something out of. You know, and we'll see where the chips fall.
Now we're going to spend a bulk of the of this 30-minute podcast going over the players, the roster, talking about players individually. But before we talk about Giannis and crew, I want to talk about Jabari Parker because, you know, I saw him working out today, and we talked about this the other day. He was going one-on-one with DJ Wilson and just looked like he could, you know, suit up tomorrow and play. Obviously, we know that's not the case. What are we talking about in a time frame for him getting back on the court in a meaningful game? And what does he have to prove to himself and to the medical, you know, crew to get cleared to play? It's going to be a while yet.
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to come back in February. That's kind of been the expectation since he got hurt. That's usually what happens with most players across sports when you tear an ACL, you know, let alone do it for the second time. It's going to be a 12-month process, and he knows that. And he also knows that he's ahead of schedule. You know, I talked to him a couple weeks back, you know, after watching him for about 45 minutes, you know, working really hard, dunking, running up and down the court, you know, not going against anybody, but he was, you know, getting elevation, you know, basically in a full-out sprint at certain points and turning, pivoting, you know, setting picks against shadows and then turning and pivoting, cutting to the rim, you know, making hard cuts. It was really impressive. And, you know, that day, Jason Kidd told me he was like, he looks like he could be back tomorrow. I mean, he looks like he could play tomorrow. Yeah. And if you were just, you know, an alien plopped down here and said, you know, which of these guys on the court is hurt, you'd be like, it's not him.
No, you wouldn't pick him.
Because he just doesn't look hurt. He looks fine. And, you know, but the thing is that he needs to continue to follow those benchmarks to prove that his ACL is getting stronger. You know, when you get back to full game speed, you don't want to be doing that for the first time, you know, and kind of really pushing your ACL. You want months of time to build that up and to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that you're ready to do everything that you're supposed to be doing and that you can do. And he knows that, and he isn't tempted. He said he won't be tempted to come back earlier. He knows what the plan is. He knows that he needs to spend, you know, time working out. He's been through this process before and is just, you know, looking forward to hitting the checkpoints and eventually clearing that last hurdle to come back to full game action and have no reservations once he comes back in February.
You know, realistically, before we move on here, one more question about Jabari. Realistically, how much can they, if he comes back, if he's ahead of schedule, comes back in early February, late January, early February, or even mid-February, how much, I mean, realistically, how much can he contribute, you know, leading into the playoffs? Because I remember when he came back from the first one, the first several weeks, especially their first few games, he was very hesitant. You could tell he played on the perimeter. He didn't attack the rim, and he was testing it out, obviously. And there were some, I'm sure he had some little concerns in his mind. He's probably going to go through that again. So when do we see Jabari back to what he was before he got hurt, which was a tremendous basketball player?
You know, I wonder if some of that, like, trepidation and testing out his knee might be lessened because he's done it before. Because he's gone through it, and he showed himself that it was strong and that he could, you know, make the athletic plays that we've become accustomed to him making.
Yeah.
So, and especially with him being ahead of schedule, he might, you know, that might help him get back into practices sooner and be able to test himself against his teammates sooner. And so when he goes against a live, you know, opposing competition, that he might be able to say, you know what, I know my knee is good. I know what I can do. I know how hard I can push and when I need to ease off and things like that. I know what pain is, you know, pain I should be worried about and pain that's normal. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, being through that process once before really could help influence the way that he approaches his return now. So it's possible he can come back and, you know, obviously there's some adjustment. No matter what, you have to get used to being in game situations with your teammates, you know, for the first time in over a year. That's normal. But, you know, slowly but surely, I think he'll pick it up and be able to contribute. And the interesting thing is, how are they going to use him? They have, you know, a lineup that, you know, worked well for them last year with Malcolm Brogdon, Chris Middleton, Tony Snell, Giannis, and then Thon Maker. You know, how does he fit into that group? Does he move in and replace someone? You know, because if you're replacing someone, you know, that definitely changes the way everything works.
Right.
Does he come off the bench and become, you know, a guy who just destroys second units with him and Matthew Dellavedova and Greg Monroe, and that just becomes like their second unit wrecking crew? There are a whole lot of options, and I guess we'll have plenty of time to look at those later on in the season, but it's something that's incredibly interesting even now as we try and figure out, you know, what's next for the Bucks with the season starting.
Okay, now let's talk about the roster, the guys that we're going to be playing in the season opener. And you have to start with Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's the, for lack of a better term, I guess, he's the Aaron Rodgers of this team.
Maybe not a great comparison right now.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. A healthy Aaron Rodgers, let's put it that way.
Well, let's go with that.
Yeah. So, you know, I got invited to tour the practice facility before it opened about 6 or 8 weeks ago, and Giannis was in there, and they told me, I got there about 5 o'clock, and Barry Baum, the Bucks PR director, took me on a little tour, and they told me he had been in there all day working. And the first thing I noticed about Giannis is that he is not the skinny kid he was a couple of years ago. He's put some muscle on his upper body. I suspect he's hit the weight room pretty hard. Do you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everyone who talks about Giannis talks about how hard of a worker he is and how he is no stranger to the weight room or the basketball court in the off season. That's for sure. You know, he mentioned someone asked him that they thought he might have lost some weight, looked a little bit more trim. And he was like, oh, no, I haven't lost weight. Last year I was listed at 222, and starting in training camp, he was 238. And just that day, he weighed in at 233. So, you know,
you can tell.
Yeah, he's added 10 pounds, and it's not fat.
No,
It's definitely muscle, and we saw it in the preseason. He is not afraid to go up against anyone, to use his physicality and athleticism, to attack the basket, to push people around in the post, to make things happen, and you know, the more that he can control and dominate a game, the better it's going to be for the Bucks. The more weapons he has in his arsenal, just the better the Bucks are going to be, because he already draws so much attention that if he can, you know, fight through contact and finish better than he has in the past, or be strong enough to, you know, get passes out or get passes faster to guys who are outside on the perimeter waiting to shoot threes, that's only going to be a positive. And just, you know, and on the defensive end, the stronger he can be to possibly defend fives or, you know, definitely defend fours and work against guys in the post, I mean, he's already, you know, among the best defenders in the NBA. And his ceiling, he hasn't come close to it yet. So, you know, what he can do for this team is, you know, limitless at this point. And that's a great reason for Bucks fans to be optimistic. I mean, NBA fans, you know, who may not be Bucks fans, look at this team and look at this player and say, wow, like, this guy's something special, and he's only 22.
Yeah, that's amazing when you think about that. I think offensively, the last piece of the puzzle for Giannis is still the jumper, is still the outside shot. And I was at the last preseason game against Detroit, and it still looked to me like he had a couple open looks that he passed up. Do you see him sort of filling in that last hole in his game this year and not hesitant when he gets that open look, even on a three or a deep two, that he just puts it up?
I think over the course of time that'll happen. I don't know exactly to what extent he'll fill in that hole. I mean, Jason Kidd was saying at media day, like, hey, every player has their things that they're not the best at,
yeah,
that, you know, that they need to improve. You know, he's like, hey, if Giannis becomes the first, you know, complete player in NBA history, like, I'm glad I'm on his team. You know, and so the Bucks think that his shooting is good. They, you know, he's, you know, in the 30s in terms of his long-range shooting, and he hasn't put up a ton of attempts, you know. But there have been flashes. There have been times that he's shown that he can do it. He can do it in transition, pull up threes, you know, catch-and-shoot situations, corner above the break, no matter what. Like, he's building up that arsenal. And Greg Monroe recently said, you know, that the last thing he had to work on was his outside shot, and he is getting better, and that's pretty scary, you know. And
yeah,
so, you know, we'll see what he can do in terms of honing his outside shooting. But there's also a question of how much of that does he need to do. If teams are so worried about what he can do, you know, inside and how much he can create, you know, that they're going to swarm him. You know, the Bucks starting lineup features four guys who can shoot the three at a really high rate. And so if you're surrounding Giannis with shooters, you know, the amount of times he needs to shoot might be lessened just because he knows that those guys are better than him. And he doesn't need to be the guy who makes those shots or takes those shots. But if he can give it to Tony Snell for a catch-and-shoot situation, that's Snell's bread and butter. If he can kick it out to Thon Maker in the corner, he'll do it because, you know, Thon can make that shot with, you know, some regularity. So, you know, it all depends on, you know, what the team needs at the time. And if he needs to shoot more threes, I'm sure that they'll impress upon him that he needs to do that. But if he can just set up guys who are better shooters, then that works too, as long as the ball goes in.
You know, you're talking about three-point shooting. That last game, preseason game in Detroit, and I know it's a preseason game, but, you know, the starting unit played a good number of minutes, started the game, played the third quarter, most of the third quarter. They made, the team made 16 to 33 from three-point range, 48.5%. Now, they're not going to do that every week or every night. But
if they do, watch out.
They're going to win a lot of games if they shoot 48%. And after the game, I asked Jason Kidd, I said, is that a harbinger of things to come? And he said, we are a three-point shooting team. Now, there's a difference between being a three-point shooting team and a great three-point shooting team. I haven't seen yet signs that they're a great three-point shooting team. Can they be?
I think they need to start by getting into at least being a middling three-point shooting yeah. team. You know, last year they made a huge jump in terms of their number of three-point makes and attempts. They went up by over 60% on both. And they were still, like, in the bottom third of the NBA in terms of makes and attempts. You know, their percentage was really good. I mean, I think it was, like, 37-38%. I think it was in the top 10 or around the top 10 of the NBA in terms of three-point shooting percentage. But just their sheer number of three-pointers is still way low compared to what the rest of the NBA is doing.
Right.
Even after making a huge jump. So they'd have to make another, you know, massive jump in order to, like, just get into the middle of the pack. And that's something that Jason Kidd mentioned the other day, just saying, hey, we just want to get to around 15 in terms of ranking 15th in the NBA and make some attempts. If you can get there.
The middle of the pack,
sure. If you can get to the middle of the pack and do the other things well that you're already doing, you know, and you can see your offensive rating and your point production go up, then those are all going to be positives. And that can only mean good things for this team, provided that they continue to do the rest of the things well that they have been doing well. So, you know, we'll have to see who are those players who step up. You know, having Chris Middleton healthy for a full season, that's going to lead to more three-point attempts. You know, he shoots more threes than Jabari Parker does.
Right.
So if you're basically just swapping those two out in terms of the start of last year and the start of this year, that should mean more. You know, Tony Snell has proven himself as a three-point threat. Thon Maker playing more should stretch the floor more. He should put up more threes than you would get from Greg Monroe or John Henson playing more. And then, you know, Mirza Teletovic, last year in his first season with the Bucks, he didn't have a great year.
It's disappointing.
He was disappointing. He's a three-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what he does. That's what he brings. And he didn't bring that. And, you know, he mentioned, you know, after the playoff series against Toronto that, at the time, he told general manager John Hammond, you know, hey, I had a bad first year in Brooklyn, but then, you know, the next year I turned it around and I got going and I, you know, figured out what I needed to do and I started making shots. Like, I'm going to do the same thing. So if he can become a threat off the bench to come in and make a bunch of threes, you know, that changes the dynamic of the Bucks, you know, bench and what they can do and their offense as a whole.
And it was just a preseason, but I watched him in particular in a couple of games, and I thought he looked a lot more comfortable shooting in three. And he made a bunch. You know, he made some threes. So
he looks comfortable, and he knows what's expected of him, and he knows what he needs to bring. And, you know, another guy we haven't mentioned is Jason Terry, and, you know, entering his, was it 19th NBA season?
I was going to say 100th.
Sure. At 40 years old, and he can still stroke the
great.
Three. You know, the guys can shoot, you know, for a long time past their playing days, and he still has plenty to give, and we'll see what kind of, you know, life he can inject into this team and mentorship and definitely three-point shooting.
I think a big key to this team and how it's going to play this year and how far it's going to go, how many games it's going to win, and how deep it could go in the playoffs is the development of Thon Maker. You touched him a little bit ago. He's going to play more minutes than he played last year, certainly. He's going to have a bigger role in everything they do. Does it look like he's ready to you to take that step and to become a really solid player in the NBA?
Yeah, I think so. I think he knows what's expected of him. He's another guy like Giannis who just lives in the gym. I know people around the Bucks have made fun of him for how much he's been in the gym, like, man, don't you have a life? Like, don't you do anything?
Yeah.
You know, and he's always around. He stayed in Milwaukee over the summer for most of the summer and just lived in the gym and tried to work on his body and bulk up and eat right. And a lot of those things were written about by our colleague, Lori Nickel, who wrote a great story about Thon this past Sunday and what he's done to improve himself and his health and to get ready for a larger workload. So if you haven't read that, definitely check it out. But he definitely changes the complexion of what the Bucks can do. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, he can stretch the court. He's a threat to shoot anywhere. So that changes the offense and spreads things out for Giannis to make plays or Chris Middleton to make plays and guys to have some open alleys. You know, on defense, he's long and athletic, and he can switch onto anyone. We've seen it in the past where he can switch onto guards, and he can keep up with them and move his feet and make their lives difficult. You know, he can also, with some added strength, you know, push up against the bigger guys and hold his own in the post and block shots and alter shots. You know, he mentioned the other day that the guards on the Bucks, they know that if the other team's on a fast break, not to foul. Because either Thon or Giannis, one of those guys is coming. And they're going to come and get those chase down blocks because they have the speed, they have the length to catch up and block shots off the backboard and just come out of nowhere. You know, we saw Giannis do that in the preseason game against the Pistons.
A couple times.
Yeah. And so, you know, when those two guys are on the court, the guards are not to foul. And, you know, he's like, hey, if we don't do that, if they don't foul and their team gets an easy transition bucket because no one else got back, the guards are going to get on Thon and Giannis and say, hey, like, that's your job. You got to get back. You need to hustle.
Right.
So, like, just having someone who can do that and has the speed, athleticism, and skill that Thon has to impact the court on both ends, if he can play around 20-ish minutes a game like he was able to do later in the season, like he was able to do in the playoffs, that makes the Bucks a little bit more of a dynamic team. And then you get a guy with a different style in Greg Monroe, who comes off the bench and, you know, really settled into that six-man role last year and acquitted himself very well, you know, became a guy who got votes for sixth man of the year and could definitely do that again because, you know, he's kind of a rare breed in today's NBA of low post scorers. You know, the league has gone away from that, but he's still got great skill in finishing around the hoop, and he's got a good mid-range game, and, you know, he can bully guys in the post that when he gets in there, teams aren't used to defending guys like him, and he and Thon can be a great 1-2 punch for the Bucks to shore up their front court.
And by the way, Monroe handled that very professionally. I mean, you know, a starter most of his career, gets sent to the bench, comes off the bench. That could have caused a problem. It was some guys on some teams, that might have been a problem, but I thought he handled that in a classy way. And, it was good to see him make that contribution off the bench. We're going to look for that again this year out of him.
He definitely did, and now he's in a contract year.
Yeah.
Now that he opted into his last year at the Bucks, you know, he'll be playing for a contract, and we'll have to see how that impacts his game for – you know, a good number of guys that usually comes along with an uptick in play and production.
Malcolm Brogdon, sensational, really, I don't know how you call it, sensational rookie year, but definitely a very, very good rookie year, obviously. Made a big contribution, very solid player. You know, I don't know if I'd describe him as a super fast twitch, explosive type of point guard. I don't think he's that type of point guard. So where does he make his improvement this year? Where does he make his jump? And can he make a jump? Because he was so solid last year in every phase.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it is just not having a sophomore slump, just keeping up what he'd been doing, continue to shoot well from three-point range, which was, you know, something that teams might have questioned him on before he was drafted, but maybe isn't a question now. Maybe he can improve on his playmaking abilities and just, you know, finding different ways to create within the Bucks offense and take that load off of Giannis. And, you know, we'll see how the Bucks use him, whether they have him, you know, just play with Giannis, or maybe sometimes he'll be next to Dellavedova, like with a second unit, and having a two-guard kind of situation there. You know, obviously he has a great relationship with Greg Monroe, and those two guys played a lot together on the second unit and had a great chemistry last season, so we'll see if he can build off that. And then, you know, defense, he's always prided himself on defense and being able to, you know, continue to switch on to other guys and bring a lot of energy on that end. You know, that they just need really consistency from him. If he can be consistent from last year to this year and continue to perform within his role at both ends of the court, you know, he can just be a dynamic option for them.
Are the Bucks deep enough, Matt? You look at their bench. Are they deep enough to be a team that wins 50 games and maybe wins a playoff series? I know some people around the NBA have questioned their bench a little bit if they're deep enough. You know, if they go 9-10 guys deep, that they can get to those 50 victories with their guys coming off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a totally reasonable question. I think their starting five are solid. I think Jabari Parker, when he comes back, is solid. Greg Monroe is solid. And then after that, you know, you start to have a little more, you know, more questions. I mean, are we going to get Teletovic of last year or his last year with Phoenix where he, you know, was making threes like crazy and set the record for most threes off the bench? Are we going to get, you know, Matthew Dellavedova at his playoff height with the Cavaliers? Or are we going to get him where he, you know, took a little bit of time to figure out what his role was and you know, wasn't a great shooting threat at all times last year with the Bucks? You know, what are we going to get out of the two rookies, you know, DJ Wilson and Sterling Brown? You know, can DJ Wilson come in and play the four or the five and stretch the court and know what he's doing on defense? And
give him 10 solid minutes,
exactly,
12 minutes.
Maybe
yeah.
more, you know, yeah. depending on what the season calls for. What
yeah.
can he be, and can Sterling Brown be better than what he showed in the preseason? He hasn't really caught on fully yet and hasn't shown that he's going to make a huge impact, but, you know, will that grow over time as he acclimates the NBA? You know, how much can you realistically get out of Jason Terry on a per-game basis, even with more rest between games? Is this the year that Rashad Vaughn makes a jump and actually makes an impact?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because his rookie year, maybe, you know, there were some flashes. He was still 18, 19, you know, room to grow. But last year, his playing time dropped precipitously. And
I think it's safe to say he regressed a little bit
last year. Yeah, I mean, they didn't even have the confidence in to put him in for as many games.
Yeah.
I mean, so the definite regression there. You know, and then John Henson, he's kind of just been around. And, you know, some games, you know, he's been really great. He's been injured. Some games he, you know, you're not sure what he's doing out there. The question is, you know, basically with the bench is, what are we going to get? And I don't know if anyone has an answer for that yet. We still don't know if DeAndre Liggins, the 15th guy signed to the roster, is here to stay or what exactly his role is going to be. But, you know, their bench at its best could be solid, you know, and you can go 8-9-10 deep in a playoff series and feel good about it. And at its worst, like, you're not going to be super comfortable with it.
I love John Henson personally. He's a great guy, but you just scratch your head sometimes because, like you said, he'll come in and, you know, grab 12 rebounds and score 15 points
and block like five shots.
And the next game, he's almost like a non-factor, and you wonder what's going on. You wonder how comfortable he is, or like you said, maybe he's got some little nagging injuries, but I pull for him when he comes in the game because he's just a very likable person.
Yeah, I mean, and if he can be, you know, I mean, when I watched him in the Bucks' first preseason game this year, I mean, he was all over the court. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he was moving well within the offense. He was moving out, you know, setting picks around the 3-point line, slashing, cutting, making passes, you know, attacking, playing solid defense. That's everything you want from John Henson.
Yeah.
You know, and usually Jason Kidd's gone with kind of a 3-center rotation and gotten guys in, and everybody gets some playing time and everybody gets a little bit of rest and all that kind of stuff. But you wonder, you know, how big of an impact he can make and, you know, and how much will they ask of him, you know, because if you have the choice between playing Thon a few more minutes or John Henson, which one do you pick and at which points? And so, you know, we'll see how much of Thon Maker's improvement and Greg Monroe's consistency, how much room that leaves for John Henson to do anything. And what he can prove in the minutes that he does get.
Yeah. Let's talk about defense for a minute, Matt. You know, I talked to a couple of players. They said their goal is to be a top five team in the league defensively. It's something that Jason Kidd has always stressed since day one, since he came here, was defense. Last year, I think they played good defense in stretches, but there were stretches when teams attacked the rim with impunity and, you know, just scored layup after layup. And there were stretches when they defended the three well, but then there were stretches where guys were open in the corner all day and just made a flurry of threes on them. So where do they go defensively? Certainly they have the athletic ability to be a really good defensive team. So what's it going to take for them to get there?
Yeah, I think they need to bring it every game. I mean, I think that's something that a couple of players have mentioned, that they need to be consistent about executing their schemes and laying it all out there. You know, and there have been times where they've definitely played down to their opponent, not giving them the respect they deserve and let them shoot threes or, you know, didn't think they need to give the amount of max effort, because that's what this scheme is predicated on. The scheme is predicated on being aggressive and giving max effort so that you can disrupt the other team, create steals, push them off the three-point line, and then have guys who can slide over and stop them from driving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it all is working the way it's supposed to, these things aren't supposed to happen. You know, but, you know, as you mentioned, that's not always how it's happened. You know, they gave up a ton of points inside the restricted area, one of the worst teams at doing that, and then they gave up a lot of open threes, and it just was a consistent problem. You know, and every so often, you know, they would, you know, bring it, usually against the better teams. They would be at their, they'd push hard and really give it all their effort. But, you know, we'll have to see if they can consistently do it. And that's kind of a hallmark of a young team. You know, young teams aren't bringing it every night. You know, that's kind of why you see those ups and downs. And while they have more experience this year, they're still a young team. And so, you know, can they kind of mature and be able to, and maybe it'll help that there's more rest between games and, you know, the schedule's a little, you know, extended.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how much that helps them.
Let's talk about the big picture, the NBA East. Handful of really good teams, handful of pretty bad teams.
More than a handful of bad teams.
Yeah, two handfuls maybe. Yeah. So, you know, let's project a little bit. How good can this team be? What are the expectations? Obviously, to not make the playoffs would be a huge disappointment. I mean, this team has to make the playoffs this year. But what seed are we talking about? Are we talking about 8-7? Can they get as high as 4 or 5?
I think 4 or 5 is kind of where fans would hope that the Bucks would be. I mean, obviously, anything could happen, injuries or you know, Cleveland, Boston might struggle to kind of figure out who they are and how they work or something like that, you know. But I mean, there's a possibility they could, if they're firing on all cylinders and Giannis is having an MVP type season, which isn't out of the realm of possibility, they could be challenging for 2-3 or, you know, something like that. But I think realistically, I see them, you know, battling for that fourth spot, being in that 4-5 series when the season comes to an end. And if the Bucks struggle at all, I mean, I've mentioned this to other people before, but there are like at least 6 or 7 teams you can basically write off before the season starts. I mean, the Chicago Bulls aren't—they're not going anywhere. The Knicks and Hawks and Pacers and Magic—they're not going anywhere. You know, the Brooklyn Nets don't have any incentive to lose because they don't own their pick next year, so maybe they'll try and, you know, and do something. But there's still not enough talent there, I don't think, that they can be a realistic competitor in the Eastern Conference. So you're looking at maybe like 8 or 9 teams for 8 spots. I mean, the Bucks, they can't miss the playoffs. I mean, barring like basically, you know, multiple terrible
huge
injuries.
Problems.
Like
it
doesn't seem reasonable to consider them to be a non-playoff team considering the layout of the East. So, you know, I wrote for the paper today that my projection was that they'd get to 47 wins. I could definitely see them passing 50. You know, I could see how that might be a possibility. But, you know, one thing I mentioned was the games against the Western Conference are going to be tough. The West has like 11 teams mm-hmm. who could be battling for playoff spots, maybe 12. And, you know, and those games will be those 30 games, you know, we'll see what the Bucks are made of. You know, and then against the East, you know, they're still going to have to play Cleveland and Boston and Washington and Toronto 4 times each. Though I think they played Toronto only 3 times. You know, so those are definitely tough games. And, you know, the Bucks have had trouble putting other teams away when they need to. So we'll see if they can bring that consistency and beat the teams they need to beat. And if they can, you know, improve over time and demonstrate that they're able to be consistent and not have those 2-12 type months, you know, then maybe they can get over 50 games and be competing for, you know, the 2 or the 3. But I just think that I'm tempering expectations for now, you know, not knowing exactly what's going to happen. I think 47 seems like a reasonable number.
I'm just curious as to how they're going to start this season. 2 years ago, 7-13, en route to a pretty bad year, a really bad year. Last year, they got off to a 6-8 start, and then they went through a midseason slump, but Jabari was hurt. You kind of understand that. But both the last 2 years, they lost their season opener, and they lost pretty bad. I mean, 2 years ago, it was horrible. Last year was the worst. Yeah, and last year was pretty bad, too. Both at home, I think, too. So, you know, they've got Boston on the road, and they come home Friday and play Cleveland. So how important is it for this team to not start out 4-8 and to at least split these first two games?
Yeah, I mean, these two games are, you know, against the projected best teams in the Eastern Conference, the two teams that were battling it out, you know, the latest last playoffs. And, you know, they're very different teams. They've both made major changes, and we'll have to see if the Bucks' continuity will kind of win the day. The nice thing for the Bucks is, you know, Cleveland and Boston are playing in Cleveland on Tuesday night. And so that means Wednesday, Boston has to come home after, I'm sure it will be a, you know, an emotional, intense game.
Right.
And come home and play the Bucks. You know, so that back-to-back right off the jump is a pretty tough situation, especially for a team that's trying to put together a lot of new pieces and figure out who they are. You know, so we'll see what the Bucks are able to do with that. But their first 10 games in general, I mean, heading into early November are tough. I mean, there's Portland coming to town. They'll play Boston a second time within an 8-day stretch. They have a couple games against the Hornets, who are supposed to be a team, even without Nick Batum for the first part of the season, are supposed to be, you know, in the playoff mix, you know, in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference. And then Oklahoma City comes to town with Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, Paul George. You know, we'll see what those guys can bring. That, on paper, should be a tough matchup. And, you know, heading into November, you got the first 4-game road trip of the season, which includes, you know, Cleveland and San Antonio. So those are some tough games, and it definitely will show what type of team the Bucks are, you know, considering that they have this continuity and they believe that that should help push them ahead and give them a leg up on other teams. And if it doesn't actually do that, then there's more questions to be asked.
Before we wrap it up, let's talk about that October 26th game. It is the 26th at Mecca, right? At
yep.
the old arena?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that one. I mean, I grew up watching games there. Obviously, you probably didn't, but you certainly know the history, and you've been in the building and can see what it's like in there. It's a great building for basketball. I'm really looking forward to that. And I got one quick memory. Mid-'80s, I don't know what year it was exactly, but the Bucks were playing the Celtics. The Bucks were really good under Don Nelson, had some really good teams, could never really quite get past Boston or Philly, you know, one or the other, to go all the way. But they were playing the Celtics, and it was right before halftime, and the Celtics had about a 15-point lead already. They were on their way to beating the Bucks. And Larry Bird was standing with the ball on his hip, watching the clock run down at halftime. There were, you know, 15 seconds left. And I think maybe like Paul Pressey was guarding him, standing about 8 feet away from him. And Larry was standing like 10 feet behind the three-point circle, just watching the clock. And the clock got down to 2, and Larry put up almost a half-court three-pointer. The ball was in the air. He turned and ran to the locker room. Nothing but net. That's one of my favorite memories, even though it's not a good Bucks memory. But I saw so many great things in that building. Are you looking forward to covering that game?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It'll be fun. I think that the Bucks are going to try and put on, you know, a really enjoyable, entertaining, you know, event and create a really cool atmosphere. You know, I never got to go to the Mecca. I never got to see the Bucks do that. I mean, I'm not from here, as many of you know. You know, I'm not even old enough to really remember
right,
that.
Right.
So, you know, it's definitely going to be fun. I think it'll be cool to see the Bucks in kind of the classic jerseys, and you know, Boston's jerseys always classic.
Right.
So, you know, it'll be great to see what kind of atmosphere they bring and have it be a national TV game. You know, one thing we haven't mentioned is the Bucks are scheduled to be on national TV 17 times this year.
That's amazing. And compared to 3 years ago.
That's a huge jump. Yeah. And, you know, that's been earned. You know, they have a household name in Giannis, and they have a team that people are kind of starting to get excited about. And, you know, this is just one of the reasons why is that they do interesting things like this, and they had the alternate court that they've established as like a consistent thing with their Fear of the Deer Knights, and they're trying to build it up and make it fun, especially before they go into the new arena. And kind of going off that and talking about the Mecca, working on something with games at the Bradley Center, memorable games that the Bucks have had. So if any of you have games that you remember for whatever reason, and you can remember the date, definitely shoot me an email or send me a tweet and let me know, because I'm trying to put something together for this last season at the Bradley Center.
That's a great idea. And we'll talk more about those games. We'll talk more about the Mecca game when it gets closer here in a little bit. But for now, let's sign off on podcast number 1, Milwaukee Bucks, with Matt Velasquez, beat writer. I'm Gary D'Amato, the general columnist for the Journal Sentinel. We're looking forward to doing this many times during the season. I don't know how many, but we'll be doing it regularly.
Yeah, definitely. Great to talk with you, Gary. And for all of you listeners, if you're new to the podcast, definitely check us out. You can subscribe to the podcast at basically any place that podcasts can be found. You know, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, basically all of them. So just look for those, or you can find us on jsonline.com/Bucks or on the Bucks app. Anywhere you look, I think you'll find us. So, you know, give us a listen and subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
From the 95-degree soundproof booth, that's hard to say, at the Journal Sentinel, we're out. Thanks.